So, how will we wrap up this week?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. Happy Friday. I'm Steve Chiatakis. BlackRock goes even more global. It's the morning open, a look at what's driving the broader economy as we're just into the trading day. So we ask, where's Wall Street? Down right now. The NASDAQ down about 0.8%. S&P down about 0.7%. And the Dow pretty much flat, down 0.25%. 23 points at 87.47 right now. We just got word that U.S. import prices rose 1.3% in May, about expected. The Labor Department said today the gain was powered mostly by petroleum prices. Asian shares closed mixed today. European markets are mostly lower right now. Shares in London, Frankfurt, and Paris are down about 1%. The business week comes to a close with a big deal. This morning we learned New York-based BlackRock is buying a big investment arm of the British bank Barclays. It's a $13.5 billion deal. It makes BlackRock the world's largest money manager. Let's check in with Doug Foreman. He's director of securities at Highmark Capital. Joins us live from San Francisco. Hi, Doug.
Good morning, Steve.
So when you look at the company like BlackRock, talk about coming a long way. This started as a bond firm, right? A pretty small one. Now it's huge.
Yeah, it's really incredible the amount of growth that this small institutional mortgage manager has shown since they came public in the late 90s. They've really been very acquisitive and done a good job with the acquisitions, and this is sort of the latest one, which catapults them into a whole new league of their own.
So let me ask you this question, because this is painted all over newspapers. You know, what about the little guys who don't have so much money to manage? Why would this be important to them?
Well, I think for small investors, BlackRock's hoping that by being able to offer a bunch of different products under one roof, the small guy won't have to have five or six different accounts with five or six different money managers. He can only go to BlackRock and get one statement and one account. And for a lot of people, that convenience is important.
I feel like all week we've seen the market rally has slowed down a little bit. We've heard about inflation over and over again. We knew this could be an issue. Why didn't any of these concerns quickly, Doug, come up sooner?
Well, until the last couple months, there weren't really any clear signs that the economy was even showing signs of stabilizing. So investors back, you know, a couple months ago were still worried about whether or not the economy was still in free fall. Today, I think there's been enough data over the last couple months that people are convinced that the economy is at least stabilized. And so one of the side effects of that is rates go up.
All right. Doug Foreman, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Steve.
Appreciate it. The social website Twitter has yet to find a way to make much money on the web, but apparently it's doing a good job of it for Dell. The computer maker says it brought in more than $3 million through tweets. Over at social internet rival Facebook, it's not hardware, but a personalized URL that people will be searching for tonight, and it's free, Mitchell Hartman reports.
Each of Facebook's 200 million or so users will be able to register their name as a personalized URL. The addresses can't be transferred or sold. And why is this such a big deal? Well, right now, my public Facebook profile comes up in a Google search as a random string of numbers.
I'm at facebook.com/123456. Isn't as easy as facebook.com/Bob.
That's analyst Zias Caravalla of the Yankee Group. He says Facebook's new intuitive web names will be linked from other sites, embedded in applications.
You can, in fact, put it on a business card if you wanted to. And I'm sure you'll see companies advertise facebook.com/Bank of America or something.
Rafe Needleman of CNET says in time, they could become people's searchable online identity, as well as a universal login.
It gives Facebook more of a power position as a provider, not just of a social network, but of identity that can be used in other sites as well.
It's a position Facebook can use to drive traffic and target personalized advertising, which it needs to do to finally turn a profit someday. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
You're listening to The Morning Report for Friday, June 12, 2009, at Marketplace.org. General Motors is reportedly close to selling its Swedish unit Saab. The likely buyer is a small Swedish sports company called Koenigsegg. Ever heard of it? From our European desk in London, Stephen Beard reports.
Koenigsegg is not exactly in the business of mass production. Last year it sold just 18 of its sports cars. That compares with Saab sales of 98,000. But Koenigsegg is believed to charge $1 million or more for its vehicles, and the company is profitable. It would like to apply its knowledge of niche production and marketing to Saab to try to reverse what is seen as the decline of the brand under General Motors. David Bailey is with the Coventry Business School.
I think Koenigsegg will have to move the brand up market and restore kind of some of the premium feel to the cars in order to sell them at a higher price in order to make a profit. That's the only way they'll ever make a profit out of the brand.
General Motors never made a profit out of Saab, and now it's reportedly paying $500 million in assets and cash to get shot of the company. Far more than Koenigsegg is said to be shelling out. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Today, the U.S. House releases the latest financial disclosures for its members. The numbers show that most members of Congress are like the rest of us, losing money in this financial crisis. Here's Marketplace's Dan Gretsch.
Democratic Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi lost at least $100,000 last year when she sold her stock in bailed-out insurance giant AIG. Republican Whip Eric Cantor and his wife had $500,000 invested in Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, and other companies getting federal help. Overall, at least 18 members of the House Financial Services Committee held stock in bailed-out firms. Melanie Sloan directs the nonprofit watchdog Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics.
The problem is you wonder if when they're voting to bail those companies out, they're really worried more about their own financial interests than they are about the U.S. taxpayers.
Sloan says congressional rules about financial disclosure and conflict of interest need to be tightened. That said, not everyone in Congress took a financial beating last year. Democrat Barney Frank, chair of the Financial Services Committee, broke even. That's because the liberal politician's portfolio was highly conservative. It consisted mostly of bonds. I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
Several big city mayors are looking into the nonprofit group Acorn for help dealing with the growing foreclosure crisis. Acorn's been working with tenants in low-income communities for years. But the organization is no stranger to controversy, as Joel Rose reports.
When Desiree Jones Wright fell behind on her mortgage payments last year, she says she tried negotiating with her lender.
It didn't go well at all. They don't really want to talk to you as a runaround.
Then a representative from the Philadelphia chapter of Acorn knocked on her door. That's how Jones Wright heard about a new city program Acorn helped develop. The program requires lenders and borrowers to sit down with a mediator and renegotiate distressed loans. So far, city officials say the program has helped 1,200 people stay in their homes, including Jones Wright, and other cities are taking note. Yesterday, New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg said he'd like to see a similar approach.
Settlement conferences should be available, we think, to all owners of single-family dwellings, and foreclosures can't proceed until such conferences are concluded.
Bloomberg went on to praise the work of Acorn. Some Republicans in Congress have tried to block the organization from getting federal funds because of allegations of voter fraud stemming from last year's presidential election. I'm Joel Rose for Marketplace.
The Obama administration announced this week accelerated stimulus spending that it says will save or create 600,000 jobs in the next 100 days. But how are those jobs calculated? This morning, we visit the very first road project to start construction as part of the stimulus package, a repaving project on a mile-long stretch of road in suburban Washington, D.C. And reporter Tamara Keith visits that project she first told us about last month.
About 20 people now working on the New Hampshire Avenue repaving project would be jobless if not for stimulus money. But can workers at the asphalt plant supplying that project count their jobs as a stimulus success, too? This week, dignitaries in suits and hard hats cut through a big red ribbon to mark the official opening of the Independence Construction Materials plant in Jessup, Maryland.
There we go.
The plant is already shipping asphalt to stimulus projects, but it almost wasn't built. Ross Myers is CEO of American Infrastructure, the parent company for the asphalt firm. Last fall, when it became clear the economy was a wreck, he thought hard about putting the plant on hold.
And we decided to go ahead because it was going to provide jobs for our people. And we're happy to say that we actually have quite a nice backlog for it.
And Myers thanks the stimulus money for that backlog. While it only takes 6 people to operate the plant, nearly 100 will be working in the asphalt supply chain. Company executives can't say exactly how many of those jobs are truly stimulus jobs. And therein lies the challenge.
You're getting at exactly the difficulty in my life because I'm the one that's supposed to come up with numbers on that.
Christina Romer is chair of the President's Council of Economic Advisors. She says the administration will receive quarterly reports from agencies about where their stimulus money is going, but they won't include indirect impacts.
They surely won't have information on the sandwich shop where the workers went and got their sandwiches. They won't have information on once you hired these workers and they went out, now had income and went out and bought things. We won't have numbers on that.
But there's no simple formula for calculating that. Peter Morici is an economist at the University of Maryland. Looking at data on government employment and construction jobs, he's just not buying the Obama administration's claims of job creation.
You can find some workers around the country that owe their employment to the stimulus package. 150,000 will be hard to identify, and certainly going forward over the next 100 days, another 600,000, that's going to take some magic to accomplish.
He says the jobs that are created, like those supplying asphalt to stimulus projects, will be temporary. The folks at Independence Construction Materials realize that, but they're hoping the economy picks up before the stimulus work runs out. In Washington, I'm Tamara Keith for Marketplace.
Cities pay a lot to deal with their trash, millions of dollars each year. So in yet another effort to get more residents to recycle, they're trying something a little different, displaying trash in a new light. Here's Marketplace's Caitlin Carroll.
Artist Bill Basquin peers into a box full of dark, moist compost. A few of his photographic subjects are placed delicately on top.
Those are the bananas there, and there's some bugs in them, and these are the carrots.
Basquin takes artsy pictures of rotting fruit and vegetables. Up close, they look like colorful, otherworldly creatures, all texture and moldy fuzz. He's also designed a compost bin with a glass front so people can see food as it turns to soil.
I personally believe that that kind of participation is really helpful in getting people in sort of shifting what they're capable of imagining.
Basquin is an artist in residence at the San Francisco Dump. You heard me right, the artist in residence at the Dump. He's one of the many artists sponsored by Recology, San Francisco's waste management company. The artists spend 4 months digging through mountains of trash for inspiration. Recology gives tours of the gallery. The artists talk about their work to groups, mostly school children. Deborah Monk manages the program. She says it's a way to teach kids about recycling.
They send us letters, thank you letters, love letters that tell us what they're doing with their trash. And most importantly, they go home and tell their parents how to recycle or not to waste food and to put the food in the compost bin.
There's a market for the art, which includes purses made out of plastic and sculptures created from old bicycle parts. Pieces typically sell for about $500. San Francisco artists aren't the only ones pairing imagination with sanitation.
Welcome to Ecological Art, the house of divinal intervention, as I call it.
Peter Schulberg directs the nonprofit Ecological Art in Los Angeles. Companies donate old billboards to the gallery, and artists use them as giant canvases. Companies don't have to dispose of the toxic vinyl, and people driving by get a free show.
There are beautiful shapes out there that, if we just take the time to turn them upside down, you know, kind of try to look at them differently, they have the opportunity to kind of live again.
Schulberg works with Clear Channel and CBS Outdoors to display the billboards. He plans to expand the program nationwide. I'm Caitlin Carroll for Marketplace.
Got some garbage? Gauguin? Tell us about it inside our website, marketplace.org. Plus, share your thoughts with our online host and blogger, Scott J. Gow, marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for being with us. Have a great Friday and a very nice weekend.
American Public Media.